Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
When we made big progress on issues, it actually has been when one party controlled the government.
I walk.
And I talk.
About you.
Well, the great one has spoken today. From the Leg Thriller, on the Leg Thriller show. You know, people don't know this about Chris Matthews. He's a lifetime pimp for the Democrat Party. I don't understand why they're so shocked. He worked for the drunk Tip O'Neill, and now he's working for the dictator Obama. So now Obama goes on his show and he says, we made big progress on issues when one party controlled the government. So what more do you need to know? He meant, well, we have one party almost controlling the government. We now control the media, so we'll control the government. And we'll get real progress. We don't know what he means by progress. That's not a topic I intend to talk about. So let's reset the program and start from the top. Just play the song because I like it so much. See, there are three topics I really want to talk about, and I am reluctant to do so. And I may go in, I may back into them. I'm going to tell you the three topics that I've been talking about all day with people in the media who know what's really going on. The biggest bombshell is Rush Limbaugh being moved off the biggest station in Los Angeles onto a marginal station. That's the biggest story in the media. Now, I want to, before we talk about that, and it's a very important topic, I don't want anyone to bash Rush Limbaugh on my show for a couple of reasons. He is the king of talk radio. He opened the door to many people in talk radio, I would say, including myself. I never spoke with him once in my life, incidentally. But the news that Rush is being moved off the biggest station in Los Angeles to a marginal station is a huge story, and it has to be talked about. And I'm going to ask you this question. You're the producer now. What needs to be done to save conservative talk radio? Now, you know me. For 6 to 9 months, I've been here in the Siberia of talk radio, about to enter primetime. And I've seen a trend emerging in talk radio that's been alarming to me. And I've tried to say to you that I'm trying to send the message out to my conservative cohorts. They don't listen to me. They don't like me. They hate me. In fact, they probably have more enmity towards me than Axelrod does. I would say with almost a high degree of certainty that if Axelrod ever listened to my show, he probably, in the old sense, understands my jazz much better than do the conservative cohorts that don't have a tin ear for music. Let's put it to you that way. Now, having said that, I've tried to tell them, if a person tunes in your show and counts to 15 and they hear the word Obamacare, and they could do that any time of the day or night, or they hear a diatribe against Obama, they're going to turn your show off. Not because Obamacare is a success. Not because Obama's not an emerging dictator. No, that's not the reason. It's because it's boring radio, and everyone forgets that radio is an entertainment medium. I have to keep repeating that. You don't understand what I'm saying to you. We cannot become so partisan that you only hear the same tin drum pounding over and over and over and over. For 9 hours a day, I don't care when you tune in or who you tune in, you can count to 15 and you're going to hear the words Obamacare or Obama. And you say, okay, I heard that. So let's put it another way. When I was a little boy, there were serials in the movies. Like each week, there'd be another serial. Let's say the Lone Ranger. And each week, the Lone Ranger would come back on the screen. It would be the same Lone Ranger with the mask and the horse and the sidekick. But it would be a different story. You understand that? Now, if I went to the movies and in 3 weeks in a row, they ran the same Lone Ranger serial, I would start throwing popcorn at the screen. And then my friends and I probably would have burnt the screen off the stage. We would have done something violent. We don't want to hear the same serial every day. We heard it. We know the story. We know Obamacare is a bomb. We know what Obama is emerging into because he always had these inclinations. Now let's move on. The problem is it's hard to move on when you can't move on. It's hard to move on when your stock and trade is Obamacare and Obama. So that brings me back to me. I'm gambling, and I have gambled, that my, I will have to say it like it is, my versatility in talk radio was going to bring me to where I wanted to be in radio and save not only myself but the format. Have I proven that to be true yet? No. I'm only at the end of the beginning, not at the beginning of the end. I've done one solid year in this dark time on talk radio, walking on hot coals, crawling on glass, and I got some ratings that came out. I can't give you the exact amounts, but I'm going to give you one example. I gambled now, and you have to hear this. If you're a talk radio fanatic, you're going to want to hear this. On KSFO, where I appear in San Francisco, which I consider my hometown, it's not that I love to hate it. I love this city, and I live here, and I've lived here since 1974. On this station of KSFO, this station in my time slot is number two in the market. Number one is an all-news station. In talk, I'm number one. I beat the old KGO. I beat KNEW. I beat the KKSF. I beat them to a pulp. So you say, okay, well, that proves you're right. You're right. Your versatility is attracting the audience you want. Now, the real test is going to come when you, my audience, are given the opportunity to tune in my show, Drive Time, January 2nd, when I'm live. First, it switches on January 1st, but on January 1st, we have something different planned for you. On January 2nd is my actual first live show. So you have a chance to actually vote with your listenership on January 2nd. And we'll find out after 3 to 6 months whether my move towards a versatile show and away from this partisanship will pay off in radio. If not, well, I've done what I had to do anyway, because I can't do the other thing. I refuse to do it. I refuse to do it. So that's one topic that I don't want to talk about, even though I've just spent about 8 minutes talking about it, which is Rush Limbaugh being moved off KFI in Los Angeles, which is the biggest station, to perhaps the smallest station in Los Angeles. I mean, remember, KFI is a monster station. Nearly a million different people tune into a day part, an afternoon drive, and sample that station for at least 5 minutes an hour. And that's where Rush was heard until now. And he's being moved to another station where only about 100,000 people listen in on average. In New York, WABC is a monster station. It's heard up and down the Eastern Seaboard. But you won't hear Rush Limbaugh on that station anymore. No, he's headed across town to the letter-deficient talk station in New York City. And so things are happening in this country right now, and you have to be aware of them. And there are different forces driving these changes. And if you care to comment on any of this, you can call 855-407-282. The next topic I would like to talk about, but I can't, is the death of Nelson Mandela. And the reason I can't talk about Nelson Mandela is because he has ascended to sainthood. And so if you say anything negative about his youth, they're going to attack you as being a racist. So I won't say anything negative about his youthful beginning as a revolutionary, other than to say that if I were Nelson Mandela, I probably would have done the same thing at that time. In other words, if I were a black living in South Africa when he was a black living in South Africa, I would have done what he did if I could have. Or maybe that shocks you, but that's the truth. You see this, you have to see the world through different perspectives in order to see the world at all. If you only see the world through your perspective, you're seeing a very small piece of the prism. Roy, remember in high school you learned that a light can be refracted into many different colors? Remember you had to memorize that for high school, Roy G. Biv? Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. I still remember it. Today they teach you how to say condom on cucumber. You don't even know what a prism is, and you don't know what light is. But when I was a kid, we had to learn that if you refract white light, it breaks up into a rainbow. Roy G. Biv. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. But we're living in such an integrated world that you have to start seeing the world through various colors, if you want to put it that way. Various colors in the spectrum, if you want to put it that way. Or various human perspective, if you want to put it that way. But I will say this about Mandela. It was he and de Klerk, and never forget de Klerk in this puzzle. While Mandela is held up as a peacemaker, and he is, by the way, he was a great conciliator. He brought blacks and whites together. Unlike Mugabe, he stepped down after one term. Mugabe is a monster who gobbled up his nation. Mugabe killed his nation while Nelson Mandela tried to build his nation. And he joined forces with the white ruler of de Klerk, and they did forge a balance and prevent the great revolutionary bloodshed that was feared But never forget the clerk had something to do with that as well. But don't take anything away from Mandela for that. The point is that Mandela was a peacemaker. He did not divide black against white and white against black, unlike someone in this country right now who is doing the opposite of Mandela. And I would only hope that our president, when he goes to the funeral of Mandela, tries to bring back some of that man's greatness and stops being this partisan divider that he has become in this nation. So that's all I want to say on that. So I've talked about two men now on the show so far, and I haven't even begun to talk about anything else. The phone number is 855-400-7282. Here are some of the headlines that have struck me today as well. Does smoking pot cause man boobs? How did I come up with that? A plastic surgeon in Metro Detroit named Dr. Anthony Yuan, he's an Asian plastic surgeon, and he says that he keeps seeing men showing up with man boobs, and they all have a not-so-unfamiliar smell wafting from their bodies, which is that of marijuana. And he said to them, look, the first thing you have to do is stop smoking pot, because marijuana could be causing your man boobs. Now, maybe this will get through your pot-addicted heads, because gynecomastia, otherwise known as man boobs, is a condition that affects approximately 33 to 41% of men between the ages of 25 and 45. You can laugh at it all you want, but it's an actual medical story. It also affects 55 to 60% of men age 50 and older. And although most cases of this condition, gynecomastia, resolve spontaneously within a few months to a few years, did you know that in 2012, nearly 23,000 people underwent surgery to correct this condition? Now, what does this have to do with the active ingredient in marijuana, THC? Many of you smoke pot and don't know that it's a medicine you're smoking. You say, oh, it's a medicine. Well, medicines are basically different dosages of poisons. The difference between a toxin and a medicine is dosage. Did you know that? No, you wouldn't know that because your brain is addled. The difference between almost any medicine and any poison is dosage. Because for a medicine to work, it has to be titrated at just the right dose. Did you know what tetrahydrocannabinol does to you, men? Did you know that? Well, I'll tell it to you right now. There's a condition of called man boobs. If you want to snicker at it, go ahead. And it's caused by a hormone imbalance between testosterone and estrogen. When the ratio between testosterone and estrogen tips in favor of estrogen, the body responds by creating excessive breast tissue, and that is the condition we're talking about. Animal studies have shown that exposure to the active principle in marijuana can result in a decrease in testosterone levels. Let me pause right there. Did you know that animal studies have shown that exposure to tetrahydrocannabinol found in marijuana can result in a decrease in testosterone levels? A reduction of testicular size. You didn't know that. And abnormalities in the form and function of sperm. You should pay attention to old Doc Savage, because you're really not going to get this anywhere else, especially in conservative talk. Maybe you'll get snickering about it, but this is not a snickering matter. This is a serious matter. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I warn you, and I warn you over and over again, that marijuana is not the benign green flavoring that the powers that be are trying to promote it as. It is a very toxic, dangerous drug. It has toxins in it that greatly exceed the toxins found in cigarette tobacco smoke. Be warned, and I don't even want to talk about it, frankly. 855-400-7282. So we've had three topics now. None of them are related, by the way. Yesterday, when the show came to an end, I talked about a councilwoman in New York who blames the knockout attacks on elderly Jews and white people being conducted by gangs of black kids on the fact that Jewish residents of Crown Heights have nice houses. I read the letter. It was such a shock that many of you could not believe it. And we're going to talk about that again, because this councilwoman-elect Lori Cumbo is exactly the toxin that America does not need right now. Remember what I said to you earlier, the difference between a toxin and a medicine is a matter of dosage? Lori Cumbo, this councilwoman elect in New York, is a dangerous toxin who could set off a gang war in Brooklyn. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Attention, the rumors are true. The Savage Nation is moving. Listen to me, Michael Savage, starting January 2nd at noon. Noon, right here on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
He once said, I'm not a saint unless you think of a saint as a sinner who keeps on trying. I am one of the countless millions who drew inspiration from Nelson Mandela's life. My very first political action, the first thing I ever did that involved an issue or a policy or politics, was a protest against apartheid.
Okay, here we're going to have to hear this now. Now suddenly he's going to wrap himself in Nelson Mandela's trials. Before this is over, we'll come to believe that Obama himself was imprisoned for marching for human rights, even though he went to a private high school in Honolulu. But we'll forget that. History will be rewritten. A virtual jail cell will be created that didn't exist. But that's to be expected. The world is a fake. Everything's fake. It looks like the dot-com stocks. You got these con men with these dot-com companies. They borrow $100 million, and suddenly the company is said to be valued at $2 billion. They haven't produced anything. They've lost money. But the stock is soaring. Now, you take a real company that has real value, that does $1 billion in business, and the stock is worth less than the fake company that loses $400 million a year. In America right now, everything is upside down. Everything is a fugazi. What's real is false, and what's false is real. For example, there's supposed to be a fast food protest today, right? Where was it? I didn't see any yet. Most of them were union workers outside, and the poor Hispanic workers didn't know what they were talking about. They were white communist agitators and Acorn union agitators screaming at the workers, telling them to go on strike, and the poor people working inside the fast food outlets didn't know what they were talking about because they had to work for a living. 855-407-2822. At least that's been my observation. Am I missing something? Was there a massive, huge, 100 million man strike today across America? Or was it another lie? See, everything that's real is false, and everything that's false is real. Welcome to Brave New World.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
So the Chinese are bragging that their warships rival the U.S. Navy, according to the People's Liberation Army. Our warships rival U.S. Navy. Yeah, right. What you don't know is their rudders are always stuck in a position where the ships can only turn left. 855-400-7282. In fact, they should name some of their warships the Saul Alinsky. They can name their ships the Lenin, the Alinsky. I'm sure they have their own communist heroes they can name their left-turning ships for. Yeah, their aircraft carrier is garbage. It's a nonsense. They're about 30 years behind America in that regard. So Obama has a lot of work to do in terms of sinking our ships. History is repeating itself with regard to our Navy. You may not know this, but before the outset of World War II, liberals in Congress had reduced our Navy to such a level that we were almost unable to fight the war. In fact, our Navy right now is at the lowest number of ships since World War I, and they're going to cut the ships even further. This is while China's building a Navy. But don't call on this. This is of absolutely no interest to anyone. I may be the only one left in talk radio actually talks about national security issues, which concern me greatly. And people don't seem to care about it. And which is interesting to me, because in a certain way, there's an existential reality to people's indifference to national security issues. Because they're like, what can I do about it? You know what I mean? I'll deal with it after the next 9/11. That's the absolute attitude of the average man, because he can't do anything about national security. We have a military-hating administration, a military-hating press. The military has been decimated under this character, Hegel the Bagel, after following the prosciutto man, whatever his name was, I forget his name. And they've cut the military to the bone. But no one cares. Instead, build Indian gambling casinos. Go gamble your life away. Have a good time. And, you know, wake up to whatever. Let's go to the callers, okay? If you were going to be advisor to talk radio shows, especially on the right side of the dial, and you see what's going on in the business right now, what would you recommend talk radio hosts to do? Now, I'm on record, and I'm not changing my tune. For well over 9 months now, I started this around last March. I saw a trend. I saw it was an alarming trend, and I said, I'm taking a chance. I'm going to go versatile. I'm not going to go mono. I'm not doing mono. I'm not doing Obamacare. In fact, I declare the Savage Nation an Obamacare-free zone, incidentally. It's an Obamacare-free zone. When I hear the word, I freeze up. I freeze up. I can't listen to it. I switch over to a CD on my radio. I switch in the car. I go from radio, FM, AM, to DVD, and I play some jazz because I can't take it. I can't take it. I don't know who listens to it. There are fanatics who are obsessed with the subject, and that's the end of it. But things happen today that are, you can't ignore them. You cannot ignore them. It's a huge story. And so I have to touch on that a little bit. And, I mean, I don't look at my ratings at all anymore because it's almost irrelevant to me. I have to do this. I have to do the show I'm going to do irrespective of my ratings and hope for the best. And I just looked at them today, and I'm number one in the actual talk market in my time slot in San Francisco. That's a fact. It's not invented. I'm number one. The only station that beats me is an all-news station. And years ago, when I was in this market and dominant, I beat that all-new station in many books to show you what will happen eventually with this show if I stay in the market long enough or almost any other market. Because all news has its limitations as well, incidentally. So let's take some calls. Let's go to KTBL in New Mexico. Kurt, you're the first up. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Let me just say that I think you're going to single-handedly save talk radio, really, sir. I don't think that's hyperbole, because I listen to a lot of talk radio, and I'm from Missouri, and I grew up on Rush Limbaugh, and you magnanimously credited him. I mean, he was the fullback that broke open the whole thing for everyone, but his show's unidimensional because he's unidimensional, and, you know, his life story is just not yours. It just isn't, and so he talked...
Well, look, I opened this topic up not to talk about Rush, but to talk about the format, because that's what it's really about.
Well, people want advice. You do that. You give your medical expertise. You talk about the culture. You talk about the world. It's not this hard. The other people are just kind of boring. They're unidimensional. You are jazz. You're FM. They're AM. You know.
You're frequency. Frequency modulation. You know, I was so stymied about tonight's show, given that I didn't really want to talk about Limbaugh being taken off KFI, and I didn't want to talk about Nelson Mandela, because no matter what I say, I'll be misinterpreted, okay? I almost was going to read from an unpublished novel that I wrote in 1988. I found a 400-page handwritten manuscript, and I started to read it, and I smiled because I thought it was so good, and then I said, I can't read that right now. That's one that has to be published many years from now. It's so revealing. Would you believe it? But I was almost going to read an unpublished novel instead of talking about the news. Would you believe that?
Well, that's what we like about you, sir. You're unpredictable, right? I never know what you're going to say. That is good.
And it makes for a very difficult person to live with, I'll admit it. No, I'm not a normopath. In fact, I have no friends who are normopathic. People who are normopathic frighten me. They scare the heck out of me. I like bizarre people who are unpredictable myself. I don't mean crazy unpredictable. I mean interesting unpredictable. You know what I'm saying, Kurt?
Yeah. The best anything, I think, really are abnormal people or non-normal people make the best leaders. Lincoln was not normal. You look at all the great leaders. There's a great book out there that talks about...
Lincoln was a bug job, by as far as I know. He was a complete bug job. Well, I'll give you another example. This is a very good topic. There's people in the radio who wrap themselves in the flag of the Founding Fathers, which I find comic because no one really knows who the Founding Fathers really were. You know, they wrote some interesting documents. They're pretty bright for their time, but they weren't saints. For example, Benjamin Franklin. Do you know anything about Benjamin Franklin's proclivities?
Yes, he was a libertine. He liked to sunbathe in the nude.
You do know. Oh, you do know. And yet the popular image from the rigid, doctrinaire conservative viewpoint is that Ben Franklin, one of the founding fathers, was some saint. A saint. Well, a pure as snow saint. The man was a whack job deviant. He ran after prostitutes in Paris. He sunbathed on the balconies in Paris nude so that women would have to see him exposing himself. The guy was a nut, an all-around crazy man.
Well, our founding fathers were men of the Enlightenment. They were kind of, you know, Jefferson, forget it. The guy was a randy man. I mean, brilliant. Brilliant, but...
Now, why is it that when I hear anyone mention the founding fathers, I literally, my toes start to curl in my shoes? Because they're being portrayed as they weren't.
Right, right.
They weren't. They weren't saints. They weren't these perfect oil paintings. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
That's all. But you get what I'm saying. It's the same thing with everyone. When you get to know people, it's like marriage. It's like it's like dating somebody. It starts out with this romantic notion of a woman or a woman's view of a man. How long does that last? 90 days till you actually see the hair and the hairbrush in the bathroom? No, I've done this for years. I used to do this in reality. I used to recommend that people understand why a person is supposed to date someone for a certain length of time before marrying them. Because you've got to know who that person is to understand what you're getting. You're not getting this romantic card, you know, that you may think that person is. It's a full-blown human being with all of their pitfalls. Anyway, I appreciate your listenership. You're listening to me out of New Mexico, is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's, the big sky, big horizon country of New Mexico. And another great thing about your show is your music. And if I could be so bold, could you put, like, a playlist, just the names of the artists and who does it? I've tried to find that out. But if you could put...
Oh, I have these sheets here. This is amazing. My producer, Neil, when we started the new show, he knows that I like rock and roll. He put together the Savage Nation Rock and Roll Music Library by artist, then a cultural music library, rock and roll by title. It's an amazing list that I play off. And they are some of my favorite songs in the world. You know, that's an interesting question. I tend to play 50s rock and roll. Is that stuff old, out of date, and... is it kind of, does it date me, or do people still like it? I don't even know.
Well, no, it's awesome. Plus, you play Rammstein, then you play some, Benny Moray, then you play, that's the whole, again, they're...
Oh, so you're a real listener. I can hear you're an aficionado. If you know I play Benny Moray and Rammstein and rock and roll, then you really do know the show.
Right on. But that's why you're popular. You're it, man. I'm telling you. I listen to a lot of talk radio, and you're the savior of the thing. I'm telling you, that's the way...
I am trying to have people listen to me and put aside their jealousy and hatreds and understand what I'm trying to do, which is save the format, because I'm not going to be doing this for 20 more years. I'm not doing this for 10 more years. I am in the last phase of my talk radio career, however long that may be, 3 years, whatever God gives me, that I want to do, that I have the strength to do it, and I have the ratings to do it with. I'm moving into the greatest real estate in the history of talk radio. I'm getting the best stations in America, in the best time slot in America, in the last phase of my career. Do you understand that it's like going to Yankee Stadium after 20 years?
Right.
So, you know, but here's the thing. I'm going to do the same show I've been doing. Nothing's changing. Kurt, let me send you a copy of one of my books. You want any of them? What comes to mind? Train Tracks, A Time for War... Trickle Down Tyranny. Which one do you want to read?
Oh gosh, it's so hard. Trickle Down Tyranny.
Trickle Down Tyranny. Stay on the line, Neil. Please get the gentleman's name and thank you for being such a loyal listener. 855-407-2828. 855-407-Savage. It's a quarter to the hour already. I'm not taking a break yet. I'm taking a breather while we play some rock and roll. If we could. That's okay. I wouldn't have called for it. Nobody ever beat the Cubanos in this genre of music. You know, I was watching a show last night about lockup. I watch these shows all the time. And I learn, every time I watch, I learn things about prisoners that amaze me. But I learn about humankind as well. And one story after another impresses me about people thrown into the Major League heavy duty bad boy arenas, the Roman arena of our prisons today. Because make no mistake about it, they are the Roman arenas of our day, and it's a hell, believe me. No matter how good the meals may be, or the care, or the medical care, it's a hell. You say, well, all right, they're murderers, rapists, all right, but that's irrelevant. And one of the things that I learn about it is not everybody who is in there started out as a murderer, but they may have become a murderer because of the situation in which they were placed. And you often ask yourself, well, you ask yourself a lot of questions. Sometimes the situation turns a man into a pure survival machine, and he has to do things that he would never have done outside that those prison walls, and he becomes a murderer inside the prison. It was either kill or be killed in the jungle. And you say, well, they're all vicious. It's easy to say, and if you start to over-categorize or rather over-generalize what people are and say they're all bad, that's a dangerous thing to do. And it's the same with our politicians. You can easily demonize anyone. In some cases, it's worth doing. You see, there are Nelson Mandelas, and then there are not Nelson Mandelas. Nelson Mandela, speaking of his death today, began as a communist revolutionary in South Africa. But if you were a disenfranchised black in South Africa at that time, you would have been marching with Nelson Mandela. But when he ascended to power many years later, after, 27 years in prison, did he come out a murderer? Did he come out waiting to burn houses down and kill whites? No. No, he became a man who brought the races together. That is a great man. Unlike what we have going on in America today, where you have a spoiled child of mixed heritage who identifies with one side and demonizes the other and drives people apart. It's a totally important story. And on that note, my friends, I'll take a quick break and be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Well, we're talking about a number of different topics. Talk radio itself is a topic tonight because an earthquake hit the business today. And we're talking about the death of Nelson Mandela and how, although he began as a revolutionary and a communist, he became an integrator, a man who brought people together. He didn't turn the blacks against the whites. He kept them from violence to the best of his ability, along with the clerk. Unlike the radical left in America today, which is on the exact opposite path, which is a story for all of us to talk about, incidentally. We've got some good callers now. Let's go to Susan on WABC. Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, yeah, thanks, Michael. I think that one of the big ways that you differentiate yourself in such a positive way is that you're talking about health matters versus health care. I mean, health care is what we seek when we're already sick.
You know, it's interesting. I thought about that as well. It dawned on me the other day. How interesting is the word health care? Who cares about health care? How much can you talk about an insurance policy? At the end of the day, that's all it's about is an insurance policy. When did that become so interesting?
Exactly. And you're talking about things like the flu shot, you know, vitamin C, depression.
That's right, and they laughed at me. The others in the media wrote me off and laughed at me when I spent 20 years of my life in the fields of alternative medicine. Remember, I was very well known as a writer of books on herbal medicine, homeopathic medicine, nutritional medicine. And I practiced nutritional medicine for a number of years. I was a researcher in Alzheimer's disease for a number of years. I've done a lot of things that I don't even talk about on the show that I think could become a bigger part of my show beginning in January, things I've never talked about. Well, I appreciate it. You're saying in a nutshell that I talk about health, not healthcare. That summarizes it all. There is a headline from yesterday's New York Times that I must read to you. Jihadist groups gain in turmoil across Mideast, a challenge to Obama. This is the New York Times. Intensifying sectarian and clan violence has presented new opportunities for jihadist groups across the Middle East and raised concerns among American intelligence and counterterrorism officials that militants aligned with Al-Qaeda could establish a base in Syria capable of threatening Israel and Europe. Are you listening to this? The new signs of an energized but fragmented jihadist threat stretching from Mali and Libya in the west to Yemen in the east have complicated the narrative of a weakened Al-Qaeda that President Obama offered in May in a landmark speech heralding the end of the war on terrorism. This is probably the most important national security article I've seen in a very long time. It states exactly what I've been trying to warn you, which is that Obama's Arab Spring has been the greatest unmitigated disaster in American foreign policy history. When he knocked out, Gaddafi in Libya, for example, you remember that story? Gaddafi was a bad man, but Gaddafi kept the tribes in check. Gaddafi warned the West before they killed him. He said, "Don't kill me, because if you do, you're going to have the equivalent of Somalia here in Libya. It will be an unruled, an area that cannot be ruled by anyone. The tribes will take over." Well, they captured him, and without a trial, as with Saddam Hussein, our great fearless leaders giggled and said, "We came, we saw, he died." And they laughed at him after he was dead. They killed him. They killed him like a mafia kills people. They killed a world leader right in front of plain sight. And what has resulted is not a better Libya, but a more unstable Libya. The same thing happened in Egypt. But thank God the Egyptian people threw out our stooge. Our stooge, Morsi, was put in there along with the Muslim Brotherhood. They threw the stooge out. And John McCain, who, by the way, should go to prison for what he did. When he and Lindsey Graham went over there to try to tell the Egyptian people, "Oh, no, you should keep Morsi. You have no right to put the military back and gain some freedoms back. You should keep our stooge." Do you realize what McCain did when he did that? Do you have any idea what he was saying? Well, this shows you that Obama's Middle East policies, the Arab Spring, which I termed an Arab winter shortly after it began because I saw it all, has been the greatest threat to your future national security you could ever imagine.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
If you're a student body president, set up a conference on campus. If you work at a nonprofit, open your doors and use your email list to help people learn the facts. If you've got a radio show, spread the word on air. If you're a bartender, have a happy hour.
It is the Savage Nation. You see, there's a difference between Nelson Mandela and Barack Obama. I doubt very much that the statesman, Nelson Mandela, would have gone on to the airwaves and told people to push his policies by having a happy hour, or if you have a radio show, push his social policies. He didn't have to do it. 855-407-282. We're talking about a number of different things. If you just joined the show, welcome. The phone number is 855-407-282. 855-407-282. And during the break, because I think you're bored already of the topics I was talking about, which were about how not to be bored on talk radio, I was trolling the internet. And I stumbled on this on the New York Post, which has become nothing but the New York Post. I'm sorry to tell you, on the new New York Post site, I used to like it. I can't even peruse it. It's horrible. It's salaciousness, all of it. I go on it for the horoscope. There's very little news. The New York Daily News site is better. The New York Post site is a disaster. But this story jumped out. Porn fans take the holidays off, says Triple X site. I thought it was interesting from a social perspective. It's an interesting, if I were a professor of sociology, I'd have to talk about this in the seminar. Porn use plummets on Thanksgiving and Christmas, and likewise drops during major sporting and news events, according to a revealing new study by Pornhub, which bills itself as the world's biggest adult content site. Could you believe this? Last Thanksgiving, traffic on the Triple X site went down 29% in the U.S. and 22% on average worldwide. You know, that's another story that no one wants to talk about, which is the pornography use around the world. Did you know that Pakistan is the biggest user of pornography in the world? Would you believe it? But on Black Friday, traffic rose again by 7%. Traffic also flags during major news events, the site reported. Nothing like a sumptuous royal wedding with all the trappings to put folks out of the mood. When Kate and Wills tied the knot, UK porn viewing dropped 15%, then spiked back for the rest of the day. And on the day Osama bin Laden was killed, there were 7% fewer visits from U.S. users who apparently chose more public means of celebrating. The website said the stats show that people pull themselves away from their favorite website just long enough to watch things like the Olympics, the World Series, presidential elections, etc. This is very telling, by the way. It's why we have the Congress we have and why we have the president we have. Unsurprisingly, religious holidays appear to have a reliable libido-limiting effect. Did you know this? Nice, not naughty, rule of the day on Christmas Eve, with porn clicking rates dropping worldwide by 22%. In Israel, Israeli porn viewing sagged 40% on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Oh, that's hilarious. And New Year's Eve was porn light around the globe, with a 34% drop in the website's use in the U.S. and higher drops around the world. Then there was Earth Day, when porn use showed a carbon neutral change of 0%. Sports are a surefire way to turn off computers and libido. So you see, idiots who watch sports are also addicted to pornography. As the Giants and Patriots sparred in the 2012 Super Bowl, U.S. porn viewing dropped 22%. New York's traffic dropped 31%, Boston's by 41%. On the day the Mayan calendar purportedly predicted the end of the world last year, by the way, whatever happened, how'd that work out? Where are the Mayans? Where are all the people who are waiting for the world to come to the end? On the day the Mayan calendar purportedly predicted the end of the world last year, a 10% spike in USU showed that Americans wanted to stay in the comfort of their own homes on a solo mission to have sex with someone they loved, the site said. It's a very funny article. I'm glad you listened. But, okay, I could turn it into something serious. I don't know if I'm in the mood. What are you going to say? The people are so stupid that they'd rather watch pornography than listen to the demise of their own nation? Hello? Yes? And what else is new? How do you think we have the Congress we have and the president we have? Because the American male is what the American male is. Yeah, okay. Global warming proof is evaporating. How come we haven't heard anything about global warming during this freeze? If you want to talk about the topics I raised at the first hour, I guess it's the time to do it right now. And here are some of the topics. I mentioned that Rush Limbaugh has been removed from the biggest station in Los Angeles, KFI, which he had been on for 20 years, to a marginal station. And the object was not to put down Rush, but to talk about what this means. This is a cataclysm in talk radio. This is an earth-shaking change. This means that big changes are coming this year in radio. This means that what you've been hearing is not what you're going to be hearing. This means that my call for versatility was correct. This means a lot of things. If you care to talk about that, the phone number is 855-107-282. Another topic I talked about was the fact that Obama's so-called Arab Spring, which was an Arab winter, has created a greater presence of jihadist groups in the Middle East, not a smaller presence, and that he was faking it when he said last year that, well, I'll read the New York Times. The new signs of an energized but fragmented jihadist threat stretching from Mali and Libya in the west to Yemen in the east have complicated, I love how they say complicated, the narrative of a weakened al-Qaeda that President Obama offered in May in a landmark speech in heralding the end of the war on terrorism. What they're saying, he lied and he was flat out wrong. But this is as far as the New York Times dares go in criticizing the great leader. Even Dianne Feinstein of California and Representative Mike Rogers of Michigan raised warnings in an interview on CNN on Sunday when they said that Americans were not safer from terrorists and terrorist attacks than in 2011. Really? Who would have thought? I thought that everything was better around the world because now we're ready to have yet another communist plan put into our face. See, it's not enough to have one, two, three, four. It's like every other day this guy has to drive another blow to the body politic. And he's not happy unless he does that. Let's go back to Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela did not do that to South Africa. Nelson Mandela ran for one term and resigned. Nelson Mandela then spent the rest of his life bringing the races together, along with de Klerk and others. He prevented violence. He didn't promote violence. He did not promote division. He promoted healing. He promoted healing, unlike this guy, who is promoting the opposite of healing. He lives on rifts and crises. The man is not Nelson Mandela. I only pray, and I have one prayer, that when he goes to South Africa to the funeral, maybe he'll come back and he may be a changed man. Maybe the better part of Obama will come out, because we sure haven't seen it yet. Let's go to the first caller, a man named Ken, which is a pseudonym. He's calling us from Las Vegas on KBET. Ken, you're on the Savage Nation. What's your topic?
Hello, Dr. Savage. I'm calling, first of all, I'm so excited to be on your show, and it's an honor to speak with you. And I'm excited that you're going to a new time, just that more people can hear you. I'm a Christian, and I was born in Iran. And coming to this country, it was so exciting coming to this country 30 years ago. I remember you were reading a letter from somebody else that had come from another country a long time ago. I think he was from Russia or somewhere like that. And now he sees how this country is going down. And I feel exactly like that person 30 years
ago. But when you say you see the country going down, why don't you elucidate this concept for my audience? What do you fear is happening to America, having come from Iran, having fled Iran under the mullahs? What do you fear is happening here?
First of all, I lived right before mullahs came. My parents, being a Christian, they knew Shah was in trouble, so mullahs were coming. So they tried to get me and my sister out first. So
they had foresight. They were like the Jewish families
in
the 30s who saw Hitler coming to power and got out while they still could get out.
That's correct. And but my parents later, they told me all kinds of stories, but because they were still there for a few years. As Christians, they could not even, I'll give you one example. If they went to the grocery store, to buy fruit, they were not allowed to touch the fruit because they were considered dirty. Anybody other than...
Oh, my God. Well, that's how Muslims treated Christians in Iran?
Exactly, even though we were born...
But I thought that the Muslims were peaceful people. Obama said it's a religion of peace. I didn't know that they practiced any kind of prejudice against Christians. How do you like that? I didn't know that, Ken.
Oh, absolutely. And
I thought that all Muslims were lovers of peace and lovers of Christians and other religions. How do you like that? That's a shock. I'm just being sarcastic, you know that.
One thing that I need to clarify, most Muslims, they just want to live. It's not this government, but this government is an awful government. And it is amazing that somebody...
Oh, wait, which government? You mean the Iranian government now or the government in America?
Well, actually, they both have become very similar now, unfortunately.
Well, that's what I'm asking you. What is the similarity between what you see emerging under Barack Obama and what you see in Iran? Where is there a similarity?
Well, the similarities are that people are just afraid. Are afraid of the...
Oh, now that's interesting. That's right. Obama has instilled fear in the average American, which is what he wants. The man thrives on instilling fear in the American people.
Right, and what is the saddest part is, when I came to this country, it was so exciting. I don't want to over-dramatize it, but it's almost like going from hell to heaven. But now this country, now, as bad as this country is getting, there is no place to run. And
so why are so many liberals still in love with Obama? They still think they live in a perfect world. Why are they so in love with him?
Dr. Savage, you have this country correct. This country, I'm a pharmacist, too. When you talk about drugs, it seems like the whole country is on drugs.
Thank you. That's correct. That is correct. I was told that 1 out of 5 Americans are on antidepressants, and I would say that's a low figure. I would say in the Marin County, San Francisco area, it's more like 5 out of 4 people are on antidepressants. They take a double dose every day because they walk around numb to the actual world they live in. They step over bums in the streets who are insulting their wives or girlfriends. They step over people who are fulminating with tuberculosis in the streets, and they say the homeless are victims. I see this with my own eyes, and I feel like I'm a man on a strange planet.
You have...
Okay, I think it's enough, and I thank you for the call, because you see, we're going where I don't want to go. It's interesting, it's true, but I just did what I really don't even want to do anymore, but I may have to do it anyway. Detroit ruling lifts a shield on pensions. You know what they're doing in Detroit, don't you? They could formally enter bankruptcy and asserted that Detroit's obligation to pay pensions in full was not inviolable, which means they could finally do what they had to do all along, which was what they should have done before bankruptcy, which is stop the pension pay. Take a look at the front page of the New York Times, and you'll see some of the most beautiful structures America ever had. Michigan Central Station, the ballroom of the Lee Plaza Hotel, the St. Margaret Mary School. They are shells. They look like third world bombed out shells, all because the unions destroyed Detroit. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, welcome back to my program. It's our program, but our bodies, ourselves, our ears, ourselves. That's an interesting one. You know, I used to like that feminist book, Our Bodies, Ourselves. I never quite understood it. But talk radio should have a motto which says, our ears, ourselves, meaning, you know, get out of our ears to the federal government. I want to talk about the pension story coming out of Detroit. It's probably as important a domestic story as any that has happened in many a year, because Detroit was bankrupt because of the pensions. They couldn't pay them. And the judge today ruled that Detroit's obligation to pay pensions in full was no longer a given. He said that public employee pensions were not protected in a federal Chapter 9 bankruptcy. That's even though the Michigan Constitution expressly protects them. Do you know this? This is an amazing story, because what happened in Detroit, they say, in this ruling, is likely to resonate in Chicago, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, and many other American cities, where the rising cost of pensions has been crowding out spending for public schools, police departments, and other services. So unlike the president, who says tax in order to fund the schools, tax in order to fund these other public services, Detroit has said, we're taxed to death, we're cutting the pensions. This is what Obama should be doing. Now, this is a liberal city, Detroit. All Democrats, all liberals, and they understand reality. It's a shame that we have a federal government that isn't even as wise as that of Detroit. Can you believe this? Maybe it takes a disaster for them to wake up. Let's take some calls. WABC in New York City. Brad, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
What's up, Doc? I just had to say that.
Right. We'll get the Bugs Bunny music.
What's that?
We'll get the Bugs Bunny music.
I'm just curious. I never listened to Limbaugh. I'm aware who he is. But when you said that he's on a lower-rated station now, was that because his ratings dived, or was it political pressure? And if it was political pressure, when you get to prime time, you think you could be? I assume you would be next on the hit list.
Whoa! This question is such a loaded question. I thought I shouldn't even take it, but I didn't hear the question till you're on the air. But all right, I'll take the question. The answer is I don't know. I know that we're talking about Rush Limbaugh, who is the king of talk radio. He's been around longer than anybody. He opened the door to all of us, myself included. We have to remember that. However, having said that, it was announced today that KFI in Los Angeles is taking him off that powerhouse signal and putting him on a marginal clear channel station somewhere in the hinterlands. That's an earthquake in radio. No matter how you spin that, that's an earthquake. And the answer is, to your question, I don't know, but I think it's a combination of both of the elements that you mentioned. Now, with regard to, will I become a target in January when I am suddenly, in many ways, the heir apparent in talk radio? Now, remember, Rush and I are on opposite, not on the same time frame. And in fact, Rush Limbaugh is going to be on many of the same stations I'm on as my lead-in, incidentally, with the exception of WABC in New York and a few other major Cumulus stations. So he is actually going to be my lead-in. So therefore, he and I would be natural allies. I would say that. I'm sure he wouldn't. But that's okay. I have my view. He's entitled to his. I never spoke with him. I'm sure I never will. The answer is, I don't know. I have no idea what the government is capable of. How's that? Does that work for you?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
What a great, great time it is for me to be in talk radio. I've done other things. I've had other careers. But when I entered talk radio in 1994, I have to tell you this, it wasn't long before I said to myself, I intend to be in the winner's circle. Now, it's taken me 20 years. It's only been two decades. And it's sort of the old Jackie Mason joke, which I'll never forget what he did 20 years ago. You know, everyone heard of him. I had known him when I was a little boy, and he was a comedian in the terrible hotels, garbage hotels. I remember when he was thrown in the swimming pool after his first performance. I was a little kid. I couldn't believe that. But this great comedian, Jackie Mason, came out when he did The World According to Me, I think, way back in 20 years ago, and he said, suddenly I'm an overnight success. They don't know it took me 20 years of working in toilets to get where I am. I thought it was one of the funniest lines I ever heard, but I feel the same way in talk radio, to be honest with you. Now, I got to tell you that what happened today is not a happy thing, but it happened. I have no control over what's coming tomorrow. I don't know what could happen to me with regard to my career. I don't know. You know, I have a feeling I know. I know what's happening January 1st and 2nd, but I don't know beyond that. All I know is this. Everybody in talk radio wants to be on the Cumulus stations that I am on and I'm going to be on. Everybody knows that. They're the major platforms. They are the major platforms. WABC in New York. Who doesn't want to be on that? Who doesn't want to be on WLS in Chicago? Who doesn't want to be on WBAP in Dallas? KSFO in San Francisco? Who doesn't want to be on RKO in Boston? Who doesn't want to be on MAL in Washington? Who doesn't want to be on these great stations? Atlanta, KSEV Houston, JR in Detroit. WJR in Detroit is a station that everybody in radio has always wanted to be on. KVI Seattle, Michael Savage. I can go down the list. And there are many other incredible stations. I can't read them all. But I'm saying to you is that I'm going to be, first of all, I'm on most of them, but I'm going to be on most of them. And so what I do in radio is going to be a continuation of what I've done here at this time of night. And remember, it's 7:35 on the West Coast. It's 10:35 on the East Coast. I'm running up against Fox News. I'm running up against 70 other radio stations. I'm running up against the Internet, which didn't exist when I started in radio. Do you know that? Do you know that when I started in radio, there was no Internet? We had a thing called wires we had to read, AP wires, I think UPI. We had to look for stories. It was like a primitive teletype machine. We had to go buy newspapers and magazines to get articles to talk about. Now, that brings us back to today. You're still listening to me. You have ass outlets for news. You can go to the Drudge Report. You can go to so many incredible websites and in 2 seconds find out the headlines, and you could do it 10 times a day, and you do. So you don't need me or anyone else in radio to give you the news. You don't. So what are you listening for? You're listening for a unique perspective on events, the news events. Yeah, but is that all you want to hear? No, there's got to be something else. So there's got to be my dinner with Michael Savage. What did I have for lunch? If I tell you that whenever I go out in public, which is very rare these days, I become an almost total shut-in, people will see me in a crosswalk. I'll never forget these Filipino ladies. There were three of them in San Francisco, and I was in a crosswalk. And one of them honked at one and said, Mike, are you happy today? I want to find out how you're going to feel tonight on the radio so I can feel the same way. I thought that was amazing. So this is a personality-driven business. And if you hide your personality, well, you're defeating yourself. That is unless you're a miserable person. Now, if you're a miserable person, you better hide your personality and just talk about the Constitution and about Paul Revere. That's all I can say to you. But if, on the other hand, you're a likable person, as I can be, and I'm not necessarily always a likable person, I can be pretty ornery most of the time. But frankly, I think the best part of my nature comes out on this show, and I think you hear it. And I think it brings some levity to your life. I think it, I don't know, lifts you up, gives you hope, makes you feel better about yourself. I don't have an answer for it. All I know is thank God I'm still kicking, and thank God I'm still ticking. And I would have to say that this has to do with an awful lot of factors that have something to do with the spiritual realm. I know you don't want to hear it. You don't want me to go there. Most people are not religious. They don't believe in this. They think it's, you know, hokum. I don't. I'm not a formally religious person. I don't go to a house of worship. I've tried over my life. I've never felt comfortable in houses of worship. I've tried. I enjoy them. I think they're beautiful. I think the rituals are great. It just doesn't work for me because I'm not an organizational type of personality. I like to be alone. And with me, my relationship with the Creator is a kind of very personal thing. But what I'm getting at is, several times along the way, between when I began in 94 and now in the year 2014, coming up very soon, 20 years now, it's an awful long time in a career, but it was my third career, not my first. I want you to think about that. Most men would have retired and walked away and said enough is enough and done what they do. You know, you can mock retirement up to a point, but there's a certain beauty in doing nothing also. I developed a real skill in doing nothing many, many years ago. Before radio, I had read enough of Chinese poetry in English translation. I had read enough of Henry Miller. I had read enough of Lin Yutang to come to understand the joy of living and in doing nothing. I learned the joy of sitting in bed and reading a book. I learned the joy of drinking wine at night. I learned the joy of eating late instead of eating meat. I learned the joy of watching a passing cloud. I learned the joy of looking at a swooping bird. I learned the joy of lying on a rug and playing with a dog and so forth and so on. So believe me, it's not like I'd walk into a void if I didn't have radio. There will come a day if I'm still around and I'm no longer working, I know how to do that. I was a writer for many years. And, you know, in order to be a writer, you first have to know how to relax and relax your mind that there's nothing to write about. Unless you are open, unless your mind is open and your heart is open and your soul is open, you may as well not be a writer. Now you could write a hackneyed nonfiction book, which I've done. They're great books, but they're not the same as writing fiction. They're not the same as writing poetry. They're not the same as writing a song. They're not the same as writing a love letter. You have to have an open heart and an open mind. And I don't know how many people even understand that anymore. So what I'm saying is, this is almost an existential thing I'm about to tell you. I'm hoping for the best, but I'm prepared for the worst in 2014. Do you understand what I just said to you? I work very hard at what I do, but I make it very easy as well. I drive myself and the guys who work for me very hard from 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm up and I'm reading. Now, that's all going to change come January. It's going to be a different time frame. If I get up at 7 and my show is on at 6 o'clock at night, that's 11 hours later. But I've been working for those 11 hours for that show. Well, now I'm going to get up at 7, same time, and my show's at noon, going to be at noon on the West Coast. So it's a much more compressed time frame. I'm sure the guys that work for me can't wait. So you can have a half a day to do nothing. Because right now they are working hard. They're great guys. They love radio. They've been in it a long time. And they're dedicated to me. So what I'm saying is, there's a saying, well, let that one go. I don't have to go down the road. I'm optimistic. But given what happened today, I don't know what might happen tomorrow. Let's put it to you that way. There are forces that are so powerful operating right now in the media and against the media that I don't know what might happen tomorrow. That's all I'm going to say right now. KSFO Dave, you're next up. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, you are the first and only word for me. I want to let you know that Obama is swindling El Rushbo. He controls the FCC, and he's swindling. He's playing games right now.
Wait. Hold on. You're alleging that this happened because of Obama?
Yes.
Hold on. You're saying you're surmising that that's what happened.
It's the truth. I know broadcasting, and the public's interest, necessity, and convenience is being downsized.
But how do you say you know this? On what basis do you say with any degree of proof, any degree of certainty that that's the reason?
I grew up in broadcasting. I've been around radio all my life. I am a radio corner girl, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, no, it sounds exciting, but I don't know what you mean.
I'm a radio whore.
Oh, I like that. No, what do you mean? You mean you're addicted to all talk radio?
Dr. Savage, I first turned on to you in 2000.
Well, you know that I was on WABC before I was on the Leaded Deficient Station, and do you know that I beat the New York Yankees in many books? Did you know that?
You are the king, Dr. Savage.
Well, I've taken so many beatings in this business that you will never ever know. I've been kicked to the curb so many times. I've been marginalized by my cohorts in a way you could never imagine. They have counted me down so many times. I was like the guy who was beaten up and thrown into the street, and they said he'll never get up again, and I keep getting up again.
Tackhammer doesn't have anything on you, Dr. Savage.
Who?
Tackhammer.
Who's Tackhammer? Oh, Wallbanger.
Wallbanger.
Why do you call him Tackhammer?
Because that's what you used to call him.
I call him Tackhammer? Poor guy. I didn't know that. Hey, look, he's a nice guy. He's on the right side of things. The guy, unfortunately, has a very limited shelf life right now, as far as I can tell. So, look, what you said is quite incendiary, and you're implying that this was a government pressure move, and there's no way to confirm that ever.
No way to confirm it, but you watch. It's going to happen.
All right, having said that, do you think it's going to impact others in talk radio who are critical of the president?
Yes, I think so, because you know why? Because, look it, okay, what's his name who got fired from MSNBC, the actor? Okay,
Alec Baldwin, but it wasn't over Obama.
Okay, but wait, listen. Okay, he got let go because no issue of racism would come up. Now, if Martin Bashir, there would be racism come up. If he got
Wait, I'm missing something. What do you mean no issue of racism came up? Alec Baldwin got fired not to do with a racially insensitive remark. He was an idiot. He sounds like just a thug, a drunken thug. So they threw him off. He said things that were distasteful to anybody of any race, of any sex, of any age group. It was a distasteful, thuggish thing that he did.
Okay, they did that because he's white and they wouldn't claim racism. Now,
okay, hold on. Wait a minute. But Bashir is not a Caucasian. He was so revolting and disgusting that General Electric even had to let him go, and they took the heat. Bashir was the... Look, I called Bashir the slimy limey for how many years now? 3, 4, 5 years?
Yes, sir.
I sensed it. I sensed that there was an eeriness and a creepiness about him. He looks like a creepy guy. I certainly wouldn't leave a young child in the same room with him. Let's put it that way.
He's an idiot.
He always gave me the creeps.
He's a ridiculous idiot, Dr. Savage.
Where's he going to go, by the way? Where do you think a guy like Martin Bashir will go now? Where can he go? There's only one place for him, either Harvard University or Berkeley, in media studies.
He's going to meet fire and brimstone.
No, I think he'll be teaching at UC Berkeley or at Harvard in the media studies. That's where all of those who wish they could be on radio go.
Mr. Savage, my final word with you tonight is you are the king.
All right, maybe. Sometimes it's not good to be king. Russia's king. Look what it did. Look what he got out of the deal. All right, my friend. Thanks for, you know, that's a good call, by the way. That was an amazing call, and I would like to sit and have a, you know, an ale over this discussion with him one night. But I'm sure we'll never meet over an ale. I don't even drink it anymore. It's all fake ale. Ale used to be good. I remember when I wrote a beer book. Did you know I wrote a beer book? Would you believe that story? Do you know that in 1975, Michael wrote The Taster's Guide to Beer. I was so into it, I did home brewing. It was an amazing story, The Taster's Guide to Beer. I put my heart and soul in it, as I did most every book I wrote. I wrote Plant a Tree, about how to regreen America. I should have won the Presidential Medal of Freedom 30 years ago for what I did. I was like Johnny Appleseed, Paul Revere, all combined in one. But I wrote The Taster's Guide to Beer. And here's a funny side story. The other night, out of the blue, on Monday night, way after the show, it was late, cold, horrible, I got in the mood to go back to a dump that I used to go to in San Francisco, a real dive. I can't even mention it because it's such a... they serve like buffalo... I wanted a corned beef sandwich. I guess I was in a state of mind of wanting to abuse myself. So I wanted to eat like a familial food on a cold night. I wanted to eat the food of my ancestors that buried all the males in my line going back 4 generations. So I went over there. I risked my life in the streets. The bums, the crack dealers. It was frightening. I went in there. I stood online. I got a corned beef sandwich. But I used to drink beer in there because they had beers of the world. And do you know what came back to me? If you find an old copy of my book, The Taster's Guide to Beer, 1975, Macmillan Publishing, with a color insert. Maybe someone ripped it off by now and stole my copyright. I wouldn't be surprised. If you find someone robbed me, let me know. I'll sick my lawyer on them. I'll reissue it. I went in that place. I had the corned beef. By the way, it was dry. It was tasteless. I found out why, by the way. All the beers of the world, they cut out a lot of the beers of the world, but it was so dirty. They haven't changed the carpet. They haven't changed where you push the glass for water. They haven't changed that. They haven't changed anything in 40. I don't understand this. Maybe the funk is what brings the young hipsters in. I know they're jammed with the Euros and the hipsters who think it's cool to eat in a dirty place. I don't know. The corned beef is no good anywhere, I heard, anymore. I don't even eat the stuff maybe twice a year. I was told with the fat-free frenzy in America today, they don't even know how to make corned beef anywhere in the world anymore. It's devoid of fat. There's no moisture in it. They took all the salt out of it, so what's the point of eating it? I mean, if you want to eat meat, go and have boiled beef or something. Did I tell you the boiled beef story from today? I'll give it to you 1 minute. And it's not to insult my assistant. I was starving around 1 o'clock. I sent him out for lunch at a local place that I really love. It's an Italian place that knows how to cook old world stuff. So I said, get me the meat dish. I'm sick of the fish. Most of it's polluted. I can't eat it anymore. Every time I eat fish, they all say, wild this, wild that. It's so wild, my skin itches and my ears twitch. No matter what fish I eat now, the ears are twitching. And I only lived on seafood for 20 years because of the cholesterol, this and that. So I'm going back to meat and potatoes, the diet of the ancestors. But it's lean beef, it's boiled meat, whatever. And I ordered a side of ravioli and a side of French fries and a side to be good. On the right side of my head, there's the devil saying, go ahead, eat the meat, get the potatoes. What are you worried about? You know, you're not born yesterday. Enjoy yourself. On the left side is the old health food angel says, no, you can't eat that. I said, leave me alone, I said to the angel. I want to eat it. I'm hungry and it's cold. And I have to do a show today. The angel said, well, at least have spinach. Get a side of spinach. I said, I hate spinach. And wait, the angel said, then get charred, get some green. So I ordered charred and the meat and the ravioli. All right, about 40 minutes later, my assistant comes back. I'm already foaming at the mouth. My eyes are bulging. I'm getting a migraine. I opened the bag. All that was in it was the chard and the French fries. I said, where the heck is my meat? What are you doing? He left the restaurant without the meat. I had to wait another 40 minutes for the meat to arrive, which I had to put in the refrigerator at that point, which is waiting for dinner when the show is over. I'll be right back.
Nation, call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hello.
They don't want necessarily consolidations where they would lose jurisdiction over certain aspects of certain policies. But this is going to be a major area of focus and has been over the last 5 years, but going forward over the next 3 years, how do we have a 21st century federal government?
The danger is quite severe. The problem with what the president is doing is that he's not simply posing a danger to the constitutional system. He's becoming the very danger the Constitution was designed to avoid. This Newtonian orbit that the three branches exist in is a delicate one, but it is designed to prevent this type of concentration.
Very important sound that I just played at the end of this hour, and that was Jonathan Turley, a very distinguished law professor who just said Obama's become the danger to the Constitution himself. But prior to that, it was Obama again being so partisan that it was frightening. And I reiterate to you that you can learn today, just listening to my Obama sound bites, the difference between a statesman, Nelson Mandela, and a partisan politician, a rather small one at that, named Barack Obama. Barack Obama will never be remembered as a statesman. He will be remembered as a very small town, very bitter, very brittle, very partisan operative. Nelson Mandela is remembered as a statesman who ran and stayed in power only one term, and then he drew the races together. Think about the difference. Compare and contrast, boys and girls.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Well, here we are in hour number three of the Savage Nation tonight, Thursday, December 5th, 2013. I want to go to my website, michaelsavage.com, to review a few articles and point something out, but I warn you, one of them is so ugly. Well, you have to look at it. It's in a church protest against Christians by radical lesbians wearing swastikas on their chest. As I feared this would come, it's happening. topless, swastika-bearing feminist assault praying men. It was the most vicious anti-church protest that I've seen since Nazi Germany. They also molested these poor young men. They spray-painted them. They rubbed their breasts in their faces. If you think it's a laughing matter, understand what fascism is. There's an audio of it. It's from WND. It's on michaelsavage.com. If you're a Christian, you better get ready for what's coming, because the viciousness, the Nazism, is here. We also put together a YouTube for you, Savage Audio, right at the top. Study shows youth turning on Obama. That was my show from last night, and it's a really good one. It's a good piece. If you want it, you can listen to it. Obama returns to class warfare as poll numbers plunge. Man accused of hacking a British soldier to death in the street in London says Allah chose the victim. That confirms that Islam is a religion of peace. Did I say religion of pieces or peace? Liberal professor says Obama's become the very danger the Constitution was designed to avoid. Global warming proof is evaporating. Adam Shaw says Pope Francis is the Catholic Church's Obama. God help us. Oh, boy. Muslims killed three Christians for refusing to convert. Iran's enrichment. Enrichment of what? Everything. Dollars, uranium enrichment, soared under Obama. And Jews still vote for Democrats. Isn't that amazing? Meanwhile, in New York, a revolution against the rich was urged at the de Blasio fundraiser. Teddy is still on my website saying, thank God I was not born a turkey. See Michael Savage on why I oppose amnesty. Read the interview with Savage in The New Yorker. And today we are talking about Rush Limbaugh being moved from the biggest station in L.A. to the smallest station in L.A. Boy, what a story that is. Other stories include the smoking pot caused man boobs. Councilwoman blames knockout attacks on tension between blacks and Jews, blaming the victims. And there's a full page in the Wall Street Journal saying today's fast food strikes that didn't happen. There are no strikes at all. It was all a lie. Huh? I didn't know that. The biggest bombshell is Rush Limbaugh being moved off the biggest station in Los Angeles onto a marginal station. That's the biggest story in the media. Now, I want to, before we talk about that, and it's a very important topic, I don't want anyone to bash Rush Limbaugh on my show for a couple of reasons. He is the king of talk radio. He opened the door to many people in talk radio, I would say, including myself. I never spoke with him once in my life, incidentally. But the news that Rush is being moved off the biggest station in Los Angeles to a marginal station is a huge story, and it has to be talked about. And I'm going to ask you this question. You're the producer now. What needs to be done to save conservative talk radio? Now, you know me. For 6 to 9 months, I've been here in the Siberia of talk radio, about to enter prime time, and I've seen a trend emerging in talk radio that's been alarming to me. And I've tried to say to you that I'm trying to send the message out to my conservative cohorts. They don't listen to me. They don't like me. They hate me. In fact, they probably have more enmity towards me than Axelrod does. I would say with almost a high degree of certainty that if Axelrod ever listened to my show, he probably, in the old sense, understands my jazz much better than do the conservative cohorts who have a tin ear for music. Let's put it to you that way. Now, having said that, I've tried to tell him, if a person tunes in your show and counts to 15 and they hear the word Obamacare, and they could do that any time of the day or night, or they hear a diatribe against Obama, they're going to turn your show off. Not because Obamacare is a success. Not because Obama's not an emerging dictator. No, that's not the reason. It's because it's boring radio, and everyone forgets that radio is an entertainment medium. I have to keep repeating that. You don't understand what I'm saying to you. We cannot become so partisan that you only hear the same tin drum pounding over and over and over and over. For 9 hours a day, I don't care when you tune in or who you tune in, you can count to 15 and you're going to hear the words Obamacare or Obama. And you say, okay, I heard that. So let's put it another way. When I was a little boy, there were serials in the movies. Like each week there'd be another serial, let's say the Lone Ranger. And each week the Lone Ranger would come back on the screen. It would be the same Lone Ranger with the mask and the horse and the sidekick. But it would be a different story. You understand that? Now, if I went to the movies and in 3 weeks in a row they ran the same Lone Ranger serial, I would start throwing popcorn at the screen. And then my friends and I probably would have burnt the screen off the stage. We would have done something violent. We don't want to hear the same cereal every day. We heard it. We know the story. We know Obamacare is a bomb. We know what Obama is emerging into because he always had these inclinations. Now let's move on. The problem is it's hard to move on when you can't move on. It's hard to move on when your stock and trade is Obamacare and Obama. So that brings me back to me. I'm gambling, and I have gambled, that I will have to say it like it is, my versatility in talk radio was going to bring me to where I wanted to be in radio and save not only myself but the format. Have I proven that to be true yet? No. I'm only at the end of the beginning, not at the beginning of the end. I've done one solid year in this dark time on talk radio, walking on hot coals, crawling on glass, and I got some ratings that came out. I can't give you the exact amounts, but I'm going to give you one example. I gambled now, and you have to hear this. If you're a talk radio fanatic, you're going to want to hear this. On KSFO, where I appear in San Francisco, which I consider my hometown, it's not that I love to hate it. I love this city, and I live here, and I've lived here since 1974. On this station of KSFO, this station in my time slot is number two in the market. Number one is an all-news station. In talk, I'm number one. I beat the old KGO. I beat KNEW. I beat the KKSF. I beat them to a pulp. So you say, okay, well, that proves you're right. You're right. Your versatility is attracting the audience you want. Now, the real test is going to come when you, my audience, are given the opportunity to tune in my show, Drive Time, January 2nd, when I'm live. First, it switches on January 1st, but on January 1st, we have something different planned for you. On January 2nd is my actual first live show. So you have a chance to actually vote with your listenership on January 2nd. And we'll find out after 3 to 6 months whether my move towards a versatile show and away from this partisanship will pay off in radio. If not, well, I've done what I had to do anyway because I can't do the other thing. I refuse to do it. I refuse to do it. So that's one topic that I don't want to talk about, which is Rush Limbaugh being moved off KFI in Los Angeles, which is the biggest station, to perhaps the smallest station in Los Angeles. I mean, remember, KFI is a monster station. Nearly a million different people tune into a day part, an afternoon drive, and sample that station for at least 5 minutes an hour. And that's where Rush was heard until now. And he's being moved to another station where only about 100,000 people listen in on average. In New York, WABC is a monster station. It's heard up and down the Eastern Seaboard. But you won't hear Rush Limbaugh on that station anymore. No, he's headed across town to the Letter Deficient Talk Station in New York City. And so things are happening in this country right now, and you have to be aware of them. And there are different forces driving these changes. And if you care to comment on any of this, you can call 855-407-282. The next topic I would like to talk about, but I can't, is the death of Nelson Mandela. And the reason I can't talk about Nelson Mandela is because he has ascended to sainthood. And so if you say anything negative about his youth, they're going to attack you as being a racist. So I won't say anything negative about his youthful beginning as a revolutionary, other than to say that if I were Nelson Mandela, I probably would have done the same thing at that time. In other words, if I were a black living in South Africa, when he was a black living in South Africa, I would have done what he did, if I could have. I mean, maybe that shocks you, but that's the truth. He did not divide black against white and white against black, unlike someone in this country right now who is doing the opposite of Mandela. And I would only hope that our president, when he goes to the funeral of Mandela, tries to bring back some of that man's greatness and stops being this partisan divider that he has become in this nation. Before this is over, we'll come to believe that Obama himself was imprisoned for marching for human rights, even though he went to a private high school in Honolulu. But we'll forget that. History will be rewritten. A virtual jail cell will be created that didn't exist. But that's to be expected. The world is a fake. Everything's fake. Do you understand the danger we are in with this man who, whenever he gets in trouble, he reverts to his race warfare, his class warfare, his income warfare? Do you understand what this does to a nation? It's never good for a nation to do this. It's never good. It's only bad. The results are only bad. As a result of this kind of rhetoric, violence usually erupts. It's sort of a wink and a nod to certain individuals and certain demographics to go out and, let's say, play knockout games. It's a wink and a nod to certain individuals to do a mass invasion of a store and steal goods because they say, look, the president said that there's income inequality in the country, and I'm on the bottom half, so I may as well take it because he's not going to do anything about it. If you listen to this man's rhetoric, it is some of the most dangerous rhetoric I've heard in my entire life. Now listen to me. Listen to what I'm saying to you. If we had a legitimate Democrat who really spoke for America, whose loyalties to this nation were clear, who cared about the middle class, that would be one thing, but we don't. What we have here is a radical, off-the-reservation demagogue of the most dangerous kind in the White House. And that's simple. It's that simple. I try not to bash Obama. I try to do other topics. You know that. But when you hear him giving speech after speech, day after day, that is right out of the playbook of Karl Marx. You have to say something. You have to stand up and say, enough is enough, Mr. President. This divisiveness is going to ruin the nation. It will bring about another civil war if you don't stop. Somebody in the Democrat Party has to stand up and say, you are destroying the nation. You're destroying the party. Step aside. You understand that could happen in a rational nation. It's happened in other nations where a leader got so out of bounds that they moved them out of power, but that was in a parliamentary system. In fact, I often play the speech of the Englishman, the goofy Englishman with the bowler hat who came back and said, I have in my hand the Herr Hitler thing, peace in our time, after he signed an agreement with Hitler. You know about Chamberlain. Well, even he became such a danger to his nation that his own party moved him out of power. But that was a long time ago. Had they not moved him out of power, Britain probably would have become an appendage of Germany. I see that America could easily be lost as a nation if this keeps up. This could easily happen to this country. Remember, he's a young man, he's a strong man, he's a smart man, and he has 3 more years to go. And his ratings are plummeting, and as his ratings plummet, he gets even more and more despotic. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The phone number is 855-400-7282. Here are some of the headlines that have struck me today as well. Does smoking pot cause man boobs? How did I come up with that? A plastic surgeon in Metro Detroit named Dr. Anthony Yuan, he's an Asian plastic surgeon, and he says that he keeps seeing men showing up with man boobs, and they all have a not-so-unfamiliar smell wafting from their bodies, which is that of marijuana. And he said to them, look, the first thing you have to do is stop smoking pot, because marijuana could be causing your man boobs. Because gynecomastia, otherwise known as man boobs, is a condition that affects approximately 33 to 41% of men between the ages of 25 and 45. You can laugh at it all you want, but it's an actual medical story. It also affects 55 to 60% of men age 50 and older. And although most cases of this condition, gynecomastia, resolve spontaneously within a few months to a few years, did you know that in 2012, nearly 23,000 people underwent surgery to correct this condition? Now, what does this have to do with the active ingredient in marijuana, THC? Many of you smoke pot and don't know that it's a medicine you're smoking. You say, oh, it's a medicine. Well, medicines are basically different dosages of poisons. The difference between a toxin and a medicine is dosage. Did you know that? No, you wouldn't know that because your brain is addled. The difference between almost any medicine and any poison is dosage. Because for a medicine to work, it has to be titrated at just the right dose. Did you know what tetrahydrocannabinol does to you, men? Did you know that? Well, I'll tell it to you right now. There's a condition of called man boobs. If you want to snicker at it, go ahead. And it's caused by a hormone imbalance between testosterone and estrogen. When the ratio between testosterone and estrogen tips in favor of estrogen, the body responds by creating excessive breast tissue. And that is the condition we're talking about. Animal studies have shown that exposure to the active principle in marijuana can result in a decrease in testosterone levels. Let me pause right there. Did you know that animal studies have shown exposure to tetrahydrocannabinol found in marijuana can result in a decrease in testosterone levels, a reduction of testicular size? You didn't know that. And abnormalities in the form and function of sperm. You should pay attention to old Doc Savage, because you're really not going to get this anywhere else, especially in conservative talk. Maybe you'll get snickering about it, but this is not a snickering matter. This is a serious matter. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I warn you, and I warn you over and over again, that marijuana is not the benign green flavoring that the powers that be are trying to promote it as. It is a very toxic, dangerous drug. It has toxins in it that greatly exceed the toxins found in cigarette tobacco smoke. Be warned, and I don't even want to talk about it, frankly. 855-400-7282. So we've had three topics now. None of them are related, by the way. Yesterday, when the show came to an end, I talked about a councilwoman in New York who blames the knockout attacks on elderly Jews and white people being conducted by gangs of black kids on the fact that Jewish residents of Crown Heights have nice houses. I read the letter. It was such a shock that many of you could not believe it. And we're going to talk about that again, because this councilwoman-elect Lori Cumbo is exactly the toxin that America does not need right now. Remember what I said to you earlier, the difference between a toxin and a medicine is a matter of dosage? Lori Cumbo, this councilwoman-elect in New York, is a dangerous toxin who could set off a gang war in Brooklyn.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The gap in test scores between poor kids and wealthy kids is now nearly twice what it is between white kids and black kids. Kids with working-class parents are 10 times likelier than kids with middle- or upper-class parents to go through a time when their parents have no income. So the fact is this. The opportunity gap in America is
now... Okay, turn them off. Okay, the demagogue speaks. Now, in New York, there's a knockout game going on where blacks are punching Jews and knocking them out. It doesn't matter if the woman's 76. They're getting knocked out. You don't know about this because it's not allowed to be talked about outside of New York by the progressive press. But it reached a new point of insanity when a black councilwoman blamed the knockout attacks on Jews by blacks on the income inequality. Do you understand that we have the equivalent of pogroms going on in New York right now? Do you know what a pogrom is? No one has said this yet. I said it tonight. Write it down. The knockout attacks on Jewish residents in Brooklyn, New York, are the equivalent of a low-grade pogrom going on in America today under Barack Obama. And that's because demagogues like Barack Obama are spiking this tension. I want you to listen to what Councilwoman-elect Lori Cumbo, a black lady, had the nerve to say. You're not going to believe what you're about to hear. She's a newly elected Brooklyn politician. And she said that although she was elected to represent Crown Heights starting in January, she released an open letter saying this. She said that many of her black constituents told her they feel threatened by the growth of the neighborhood's Jewish community, and she fears this tension could be spiking the recent violence. Let me quote this demagogue. Quote, many African-American / Caribbean residents expressed a genuine concern that as the Jewish community continues to grow, they would be pushed out by their Jewish landlords or by Jewish families looking to purchase homes. Close quote, Cumbo wrote in the 1,200-word letter, which was emailed to supporters and posted on her Facebook page. This is the equivalent of the pogroms in the old world where surrounding poor whites attacked Jews in their villages and then justified it by saying those damn Jews are doing too well. Do you have any idea why this is happening? She then went on to say that these sentiments among black Crown Heights residents, quote, offer possible insight as to how young African-American / Caribbean teens could conceivably commit a hate crime against a community that they know very little about. Can you believe this? Can you believe that a person elected to an office would say a thing like this? Can you believe that she hasn't been told to step down immediately? Can you believe that a black woman would get up in America today and say that she justifies African-Americans or Caribbean youth punching old women in the face or old men in the face because they feel uncomfortable about real estate, the real estate crunch? Does she think that all Jewish people are rich? That's a stereotype and a lie. Is she saying that all Jewish people want to kick African-Americans out of their houses? That's out of Hitler's Germany. So she is now quoting the same kind of, is espousing the same kind of divisiveness that Obama is doing in the White House. And she's justifying the attacks in a very subtle manner, etc. Now, if you look at what she actually said, you'll understand that it's something that was said in Germany about the Jews some 70 or 80 years ago, whatever the number is. I don't have a mathematical playbook in my head. I'm very focused on this woman. What she's saying here is that it's justifiable what the youth are doing. She has a sympathy for those who hold the success of the Jews as a negative. It's an apology for those who are beating up old Jews. She didn't say that there's anything wrong with it. This is what's going on now in New York. Racism, overt racism, is being sold in New York as fairness. Just as Obama sells overt class warfare as fairness, she's selling racial warfare as fairness. And so you see what people are saying. Always an excuse for thuggery. Another one writes, in typical liberal fashion, she blamed the victims. Keep telling your black constituents that they are victims forever and always. And someone wrote, she is the root of the problem here by spurring them on. Another guy wrote, it's like New York City in the 70s and 80s. You got mugged on the subway at 1 a.m.? Why were you riding the subway at 1 a.m.? Well, of course your car was broken into. Why do you own such a nice car in New York City? Another one writes, so it's the Jews' fault that black teenagers go up and sucker punch an old woman? Someone wrote, wow, the good councilwoman would have fit in quite nicely in Hitler's Germany. Do you understand what's going on in your country under Obama and why this hell is breaking out across the nation? Do you understand that there's a war against the middle class? Well, maybe you will one day. How do you feel about a incoming councilwoman in New York City justifying the attacks on elderly Jews by packs of teens, black teens in most cases? Let me take some calls. Dean on KSFO, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Mr. Savage, I'm just recently a listener, and I just wish your show was, I can't wait till it's on at around noontime. I am going to go online as soon as I get out of my freezing car that I parked here through the commercials. I'm going to go up, and I'm going to buy a book of yours or something to support you.
Now, I'm going to send you a copy for free of Trickle Down Tyranny. Don't get me wrong. I'm way past the point of selling books. A, to make a living, or B, to make a point. I want you to have a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny. It's out in paperback, and I think we can get you a hardcover copy. So stay on the line. But thank you very much for finding the show. It's very important that you do. That opens up a line at 855-407-282. 855-407-282. Yeah, isn't it strange in this age of global warming that we're all freezing out here in California? Brr. I got the heater turned up. Fireplace is going to go on tonight. Brr. I had to cover my plants with a sheet, the ones that I know are very sensitive to cold. And the fraud, liar, criminals in the global warming mafia are nowhere to be seen tonight. The fraud, lying criminals in the global warming mafia are nowhere to be seen tonight. Isn't it shocking that you have to live through these lies, that there's no one to set this straight? Is it any wonder that the youth in the Harvard study would like to recall all of Congress? And by a majority would like to recall a president. Do you think the youth are that stupid? See, there's a revolution going on in the United States of America and the world. You have the Pope speaking right out of Karl Marx. You have an outright radical leftist named Bill de Blasio who was elected in New York by 73% of the electorate because he used race and economic messages of hatred and division to get where he is. And now you have a president. It's almost an international coordinated campaign going on around the globe. And we're very, very close to losing all of our freedoms in this country. When you hear the word progressive, you know what that is. It's a code word for communism. Progressive is a code word for communism. The new communist movement is called progressive movement. There is no longer a CPUSA. They are running the country. The Communist Party USA is in power in the Democrat Party. There is virtually no difference between the Communist Party USA and their missives and what Obama says almost on a daily basis or what this new mayor of New York says. It's right out of the CPUSA song sheet. You may say he's a liberal firebrand. It would be the equivalent of a Ku Klux Klan member winning in New York City. If a Ku Klux Klan member had won an election, let's say, in Nashville, Tennessee, that would be the same earthquake that just happened in New York City on the opposite side of the spectrum. If we had a Ku Klux Klan member in the White House who every day was speaking from his vantage point of the far right, it would be no different than what Obama says from the vantage point of the far left. But you see, you've become so used to Obama's silk-smooth voice and his polished delivery that it no longer shocks you. It may offend you, but it doesn't shock you. It should shock you. Obama is saying things that just 20 years ago would have been seen as for what they are. What Obama is saying is revolutionary. Now you think, hey, that's cool. Well, my friends, if you think revolution is cool, then open up the internet and take a look at what revolution has brought to Syria. And then get back to me about how good revolutions turn out. If you think civil war is a good thing, then go onto the internet and look up some photographs of what the battlefields looked like after men were butchered in a civil war battle. We must be very cautious about the type of people that we have elected and the type of situations that they lead us into. President Obama is perhaps at a tipping point in his own career. He has a choice to straighten out his ship and start to fly in a middle way, or to get even more demonic and more demonstrably dangerous in his rhetoric. And I am afraid that the latter is what's going to happen, not the former. I fear that as the people see through him and mock him, most importantly that part, he cannot take any kind of ridicule. He's extremely sensitive to criticism. He's not made for the presidency in that regard. He bristles at it. In fact, members of the mainstream media are saying it's like the Soviet Union. Do you know that there are no photos that are permitted to be taken of this man other than photos put out by his own photographers? Are you aware of that? That even Associated Press reporters filed on Monday an astonishing statement that they've never seen anything like this in their entire life, that they are not allowed to take pictures of him unless the pictures are given by the White House, they can't publish them. They said this is something never before seen in American history. You've got liberal reporters who are still honest liberals who say that we have something the equivalent of the Soviet Union going on coming out of the White House. And yet there are the good Germans, the type of German who looked the other way while people were being sent off around him. Came in the house, took the people away, took their goods. And the good German would say, nothing happened in my neighborhood. Now, I'm not saying that's happening in America. That's not my point. I'm saying that there are good Americans who are behaving like the good Germans. No matter what you say to them, the spying scandal, it doesn't exist. The targeting of the IRS, it doesn't exist. The disaster of Obamacare showing his incompetence, it doesn't exist, and it doesn't matter. No matter what the scandal may be, they say it doesn't matter. Why? Because they are the good German. They are the good German who will look the other way when the government comes to get you and puts you in a FEMA camp. Now, many say, ah, come on, now you're going off the walls. Am I? You don't think about things like that? You don't see it? Whatever happened to the 2 billion bullets, the hollow point bullets that your lover of peace government bought? Where did those bullets go? Where did those 2 billion hollow point 9mm rounds go? You don't know anything about it because the mainstream press doesn't even want to talk about it. But these are the things that we on talk radio are paid to talk about. The things that are so important but are omitted from the mainstream media or by the mainstream media. And they're shocked by Obama's behavior and the White House's behavior. Not so much by the behavior, but because they're being locked out. Do you understand the difference? They don't really care that it's a controlled press. They care only that they're being locked out of the White House. They're no longer part of the in crowd because they weren't good boys and girls. That's all they care about. Anyway, we have a big job ahead of us. Bill de Blasio in New York, Obama in the White House, the Pope in Rome, Does it get any better than this for the radical left? We'll have to wait and see. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
So the Chinese are bragging that their warships rival the U.S. Navy, according to the People's Liberation Army. Our warships rival U.S. Navy. Yeah, right. What you don't know is their rudders are always stuck in a position where the ships can only turn left. 855-400-7282. In fact, they should name some of their warships the Sololinsky. They can name their ships the Lenin, the Alinsky. I'm sure they have their own communist heroes they can name their left-turning ships for. Yeah, their aircraft carrier is garbage. It's a nonsense. They're about 30 years behind America in that regard. So Obama has a lot of work to do in terms of sinking our ships. History is repeating itself with regard to our Navy. You may not know this, but before the outset of World War II, liberals in Congress had reduced our Navy to such a level that we were almost unable to fight the war. In fact, our Navy right now is at the lowest number of ships since World War I, and they're going to cut the ships even further. This is while China's building a Navy. But don't call on this. This is of absolutely no interest to anyone. I may be the only one left in talk radio actually talks about national security issues, which concern me greatly. And people don't seem to care about it. And which is interesting to me, because in a certain way, there's an existential reality to people's indifference to national security issues. Because they're like, what can I do about it? You know what I mean? I'll deal with it after the next 9/11. That's the absolute attitude of the average man, because he can't do anything about national security. We have a military-hating administration, a military-hating press. The military has been decimated under this character, Hegel the Bagel, after following the prosciutto man, whatever his name was, I forget his name. And they've cut the military to the bone, but no one cares. Instead, build Indian gambling casinos. Go gamble your life away. Have a good time. And, you know, wake up to whatever. I was trolling the internet, and I stumbled on this on the New York Post, which has become nothing but... The New York Post, I'm sorry to tell you, on the new New York Post site, I used to like it. I can't even peruse it. It's horrible. It's salaciousness, all of it. I go on it for the horoscope. There's very little news. The New York Daily News site is better. The New York Post site is a disaster. But this story jumped out. Porn fans take the holidays off, says Triple X site. I thought it was interesting from a social perspective. It's an interesting, if I were a professor of sociology, I'd have to talk about this in the seminar. Porn use plummets on Thanksgiving and Christmas, and likewise drops during major sporting and news events, according to a revealing new study by Pornhub, which bills itself as the world's biggest adult content site. Could you believe this? Last Thanksgiving, traffic on the XXX site went down 29% in the U.S. and 22% on average worldwide. You know, that's another story that no one wants to talk about, which is the pornography use around the world. Did you know that Pakistan is the biggest user of pornography in the world? Would you believe it? But on Black Friday, traffic rose again by 7%. Traffic also flags during major news events, the site reported. Nothing like a sumptuous royal wedding with all the trappings to put folks out of the mood. When Kate and Wills tied the knot, UK porn viewing dropped 15%, then spiked back for the rest of the day. And on the day Osama bin Laden was killed, there were 7% fewer visits from U.S. users who apparently chose more public means of celebrating. The website said the stats show that people pull themselves away from their favorite website just long enough to watch things like the Olympics, the World Series, presidential elections, etc. This is very telling, by the way. It's why we have the Congress we have and why we have the president we have. Unsurprisingly, religious holidays appear to have a reliable libido-limiting effect. Did you know this? Nice, not naughty, rule of the day on Christmas Eve, with porn-clicking rates dropping worldwide by 22%. In Israel, Israeli porn viewing sagged 40% on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Oh, that's hilarious. And New Year's Eve was porn light around the globe, with a 34% drop in the website's use in the U.S. and higher drops around the world. Then there was Earth Day, when porn use showed a carbon neutral change of 0%. sports are a surefire way to turn off computers and libido. So you see, idiots who watch sports are also addicted to pornography. As the Giants and Patriots sparred in the 2012 Super Bowl, U.S. porn viewing dropped 22%. New York's traffic dropped 31%. Boston's by 41%. On the day the Mayan calendar purportedly predicted the end of the world last year, a 10% spike in U.S. youth showed that Americans wanted to stay in the comfort of their own homes on a solo mission to have sex with someone they love, the site said. It's a very funny article. I'm glad you listened. But, okay, I could turn it into something serious. I don't know if I'm in the mood. What are you going to say? The people are so stupid that they'd rather watch pornography than listen to the demise of their own nation? Hello? Yes? And what else is new? How do you think we have the Congress we have and the president we have? Because the American male is what the American male is. Yeah, okay. Global warming proof is evaporating. How come we haven't heard anything about global warming during this freeze? Here are some of the topics. I mentioned that Rush Limbaugh has been removed from the biggest station in Los Angeles, KFI, which he had been on for 20 years, to a marginal station. And the object was not to put down Rush, but to talk about what this means. This is a cataclysm in talk radio. This is an earth-shaking change. This means that big changes are coming this year in radio. This means that what you've been hearing is not what you're going to be hearing. This means that my call for versatility was correct. This means a lot of things. And that's the end of it. But things happen today that you can't ignore them.
Savage.